to this edition of the Hagman Report, hour number 3. We have a great guest coming up. He's the author of Crushing the Collective, Charles Sasser. He's coming on for his part 2 interview. Folks, if you want to get this book, go to the WorldNet Daily Superstore, use promo code Hagman, and purchase this book. It is a best-selling book and really, really good. We're going to dig into some of the contents of this book when Mr. Sasser joins us in just a few minutes. Again, our last guest, Rox Chella, fantastic guest.
Great, absolutely.
Great first time out, and we're definitely going to have her back.
Yeah, I want to just jump in quickly. Rox, thank you so much for your time this evening. Rox Chella, what a lovely woman, you know. Speaking with her offline is a joy, and we're going to get behind the Mad Tea Show and help it grow quickly and become a success. And Joe and I were so absorbed in what she was saying, we blew it with the show clock. So anyway, we've got a very special guest, Charles Sasser, and we got such a huge response when we had Mr. Charles Sasser on about 2.5 weeks ago. Again, his book, Crushing the Collective, you can get that at the WND Superstore. Use promo code Hagman. But tonight's episode is, in fact, titled Crushing the Collective Part 2. Because in Mr. Sasser, I'm not even sure what it was per se, but he resonated with everyone. There's something about this man that lit our audience up, and the emails and our interactive chat made it very clear, bring Mr. Sasser back. Joe?
Absolutely. Real quick, before we get... No, we got Mr. Sasser. Thank you, Eric. Eric's working hard over there as we continue to tell you that the interface software between to broadcast the YouTube video is having some issues tonight, so we thank Tech Eric for all his hard work. Charles Sasser is our guest again in his book, Crushing the Collective. You can get it on WorldNet Daily Superstore. Promo code Hagman, the subtitle of this book, The Last Chance to Keep America Free and Self-Governing. Mr. Sasser, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Is this Mr. Hagman?
Yeah, this is Joe Hagman, and you got John, co-hosting. My father is at a conference in Missouri, in Branson, Missouri, so it's me and John tonight.
Mr. Sasser, welcome to the Hagman Report. John Robertson, sitting in for Doug Hagman. Who is away, and it is just such a privilege to have you back so soon, sir. Now, I am the producer of the show, so when we first found Crushing the Collective, you know, we got a call from Michael Thompson over at WND. He said, listen, you've got to bring this man on and do so quickly. And, you know, all I needed to hear, Mr. Sasser, is former Special Forces, former Green Beret, and Michael Thompson had me sold right there. So if I may, take a moment, and just for those of our listeners and viewers who did not join us 2 weeks ago, just give us a little introduction of yourself, and then we're going to jump right into Crushing the Collective. And we were hoping, Mr. Sasser, with your permission, to look at the darker side of the book tonight, the collective world and the decline.
Yes, I agree. I think that is something we definitely ought to look at. What do you want me to tell me about myself? I was a cop. I was in Special Forces. I was a rodeo cowboy. I have a ranch. I've traveled all over the world. I was a combat correspondent. I came from the hills. I came from the Ozarks and didn't want to stay there. Got a little anecdote to tell about that.
Okay.
There was a, you know, I grew up, I think I told you before, so poor poverty was a step up. Out of the Ozark Mountains, Dad could neither read nor write. And a radio host asked me one time on an interview, said, how was it possible, that he knew my background, how was it possible that someone grew up that poor and you with absolutely no influence around other than cotton fields, how was it possible that you could have become so at least reasonably successful with that kind of a background? And I said, I couldn't have done it today. Because today, the first thing that would have happened, I would have a government worker come out with his little pointy shoes and little sniffing nose and say, hey, you can't do anything without government help. And I would have become dependent upon government, and I couldn't have done it. You succeed because of an inner drive. You succeed because you don't have some, nobody's made you a victim. I didn't know I was a victim. But once you make a person a victim, you make them dependent, you own him. And I just always said, you know, that's one of the things that has been happening ever since the Frankfurt School. I think we talked about that last time. This long drive through the institutions to take over, destroy all our institutions. That's the main thing you do. You make victims out of people. And you make victims out of people, and the first thing they do is they're dependent. And you make dependent, you're no longer a free man. You become a slave to government. And that's where we're coming. Anyway, that's kind of my background.
Okay, and I remember last time you were on, you were telling us the story of the living in a basically a shack with dirt floors, and using the I forget, it was basically the equivalent of food stamps today back then. Oh. and the humiliation you explained of having to go and stand in line, and what the guy said to you. I remember that very well, and that's a very interesting story.
You want to tell that again?
Sure, because you talk about how can you be successful with the background you have. Many people who grow up in that kind of background, with that life experience, learn very quickly that they don't want to live like that. And as you said, it gives you that inner drive, you know, to get ahead in life. So yeah, go ahead and tell that story.
No, yeah. Well, I left home when I was 17. Well, I enlisted in the military when I was 17, and I said the one thing I'll never do is go back in a cotton field, and I haven't. And but that we were, you know, real poor. We lived in that dirt floor chicken house at one time. We lived in an old barn at one time, and we lived in tin roof shacks, you know, with no electricity, no plumbing, and this kind of thing. Dad neither read nor write. Mama quit school in the eighth grade to start work. And, you know, we were all a bunch of hillbillies, but we were proud hillbillies. We were independent. We took nothing from no one. We depended upon ourselves, even though we were poor. And did a lot of trapping for food and hunting and this kind of thing. But I guess one year we were more hard up than usual, I think. We must have been. I was about 12 years old. And my dad consented to, you know, people encouraging to go down to the county barn and sign up for what he called gimpy groceries, government surplus commodities. My dad was too proud to go down. And I was 12, and he sent me down to sign up and get the, you know, government cheese and beans and so forth. So I went down there reluctantly, kind of sneaked around. It was in a little town nearby, and I sneaked around the back streets because it would be really humiliating to be seen going to a gimpy grocery place. And I get in there, and one of the men there pushed me for some reason. One of the government workers pushed me for some reason, and I've always been a scrapper. One of my later careers, I was a professional kickboxer. I mean, I was scrappy, always scrappy. And the guy pushed me. And this, John, this is the best lesson I've ever learned in life. It's the lesson that carried me through the rest of my life. When he pushed me and I'm ready to fight, he says, "Boy, if the government feeds you, it'll do what it damn well pleases."
And there it is. There it is from our a very special Hour 3 guest, Charles Sasser, who put it all together in Crushing the Collective. And, you know, forgive my inarticulate approach here, sir, but I think you just emanate common sense is what it comes down to. And so much of what we parse through on this show, day in, day out, week in and week out, if you really pull the camera lens back far enough, none of it makes sense.
Oh, it's absurdity. This cultural madness. I call it going bonkers. You know, it's a wacky world. And what we're not supposed... You know, this is all part of control. It's what we have to understand is all this wackiness, the transgenders and gays marrying gays or their Doberman pinchers or whatever, there's a purpose behind all this. And the purpose is control. If you haven't noticed political correctness... I call it, you know, Marxist culturalism, you know?
Yep.
It's all part of the design to make people, if you can't speak, Cheryl Atkinson wrote this great book, and she said, you know, we're 46 in the world now when it comes to freedom of speech and freedom of the press. Do you know that only, I think like 27%, they did a survey recently, only 27% of Americans can name the three branches of government. Like 30%.
Yeah, I saw 30, that.
Yeah, they're like 30%, I forget the exact notes, but it's something like that. Only about 30% can name even one of the items in the First Amendment.
Yeah.
Only one. Now that's ignorance, but you see, ignorance is power against you. If you're an ignorant person, you will fall for anything. And we've fallen for anything. If you believe in nothing, you know, you'll believe in anything. And essentially,
very well
that's
said.
What we've happened. And common sense, man, common sense. My old grandpa, he was also couldn't read nor write, and grew up in fields and stuff. And he always had these old sayings that I love. And he says, I don't care what you do on your property, but once you step across my fence, you push my fence, you're stepping on my property. That was just common sense stuff. So I grew up with that kind of thing. And he says, and I think this applies to what we see now in so-called progressivism. He had this other little saying. He says, deep streams run quietly. You know, he was talking about human nature. Deep streams run quietly. But shallow streams are noisy and loud and intrusive. And that's what we're seeing. We've got a bunch of noisy streams out here that are shallow, but they're controlling us. They're controlling us.
Well, they're certainly trying to, and they're controlling the narrative with the help of their complicit buddies in the fake stream media. Our guest, Charles Sasser. Charles, taking a look at St. Louis tonight, it looks like there's going to be trouble in Richmond, Virginia tomorrow. We were looking at two chapters of Crushing the Collective before the show this evening. Chapter 8, The Collective World, and Chapter 9, The Decline. I don't want to put you on the spot, Mr. Sasser, but where would you say we are right now?
Well, on Alexander, you know, we talked about Alexander Tintner the last time we were on the tyranny-liberty cycle, and we're back to dependency. You know, that whole little cycle, every society goes through the same point on the way to decline. We're on dependency. The next one is bondage. And once you become dependent, you become a slave. And that's the whole intent of this Frankfurt School that was, you know, originally began during the Russian Revolution by the communists. And the whole idea was to bring socialism to the world. So we're back on dependency in this nation when we have 47% of our people that are dependent upon the rest of us for their livelihood in some form or another. We're like pigs running to a trough looking for something free. I guess I told you last time, if you heard this before, stop me. I was an undercover journalist on Occupy Wall Street in 2011 and all that movement. Occupy Wall Street has evolved into Antifa. Those are the same people. And I was down there, and they'd run around, and everything was free. Free public transportation, free education, free health care, free. They were victims. They were the 99% who were being victimized by the 1%. So we're declining. You know, John, the problem we got here is, we can see we're living through the decline of cultural and political and social decline of the Western civilization. Now we look at Europe. Europe is gone. I mean, it's gone from its dependency. It's back toward bondage right now. It's pretty become the bondage. I mean, they've been overtaken by the barbarians. Like Rome was had barbarians at the gate. Well, Rome let the barbarians inside the gate because their men became too wussy to defend it.
Go ahead. Well, actually, let me get this out. Would you say that we're probably somewhere in Chapter 8, The Collective World, maybe between dystopia and As Rome Went? Does that sound about right?
Yes, As Rome Went. We always compare it to Rome, but it's very apt there now. Because if you look in the last days of Rome, John, what did you have? You had homosexuality increased, social deviance. You know, remind me to tell you about Marcuse, who in the 1960s was a Berkeley professor and who came out of the Frankfurt School that came to the U.S. Columbia University in the 1930s. But he came out of that, and he says one of the things that we must do, this march through the institutions, take over all the institutions or destroy them. And he said one of the things we must destroy is our sexual mores. Because once you destroy them, I mean, that's Sodom and Gomorrah. We're heading down the long road to control. And, so we're heading down that road now, and we're right on that.
Yeah.
And another thing we've got to understand, you know, we're saying, is this heading to Marxism? Yes. But what we fail to understand is that Marxism was the source of both communism and fascism. I mean, it's not that like they're separate. They're the same thing. But what we're having here is fascist techniques used by Marxists in order to take over and silence people like me or Ann Coulter or just recently, what was the guy last night at Berkeley, and they had the big Berkeley, and they had the whole thing that cost $600,000 just to let the man speak free there.
Yep.
And using First Amendment rights. This is fascist tactics. Fascism and communism are exactly the same thing. They both end up socialists. Both were socialists. As Gramsci says, you know, Gramsci was one of the founders of fascism in Italy. And he also was, you know, a follower of the Frankfurt School. He was a best-known Marxist in the world at time, and he became the philosopher for fascism. Mussolini was a Marxist. You see, I can go on and on, but I try to teach this sometimes on how this happened, how fascism and Marxism kind of split, but they only split because it became convenient for the so-called progressives that America, the progressive party has come out of the fascist branch of Marxism. It's not the communist branch, it's the fascist branch. Marcuse says, this is interesting, I always thought. I was going to tell you, yeah, Mussolini, you know, they said that almost every, the first fascists all came out of the Marxist movement. And Marcuse was a professor at Berkeley in the 1960s. And he said that America would never accept socialism through revolution or on its own. That we would march through institutions, and what we've done is march through institutions. And he said it could take decades. So, if we look at now, healthcare, Bernie Sanders just proposed a bill to make one-payer government healthcare.
Yeah, this is the push towards single-payer, the nationalization of our healthcare system. This was the goal of Obamacare, getting the government involved and inching closer and closer to a totally government-controlled health coverage with no insurance companies whatsoever.
Well, you understand. You know, these people are fascists. For example, I've got a quote here. I wrote down someplace. Mussolini, he says, all is in the state and nothing. Nothing exists or has value outside the state. And Gentile, who was also a philosopher of fascism, says, for fascism, state and individual are one. Now, why I'm telling you these quotes, because I want you to think of other quotes, recent quotes. Take one by Obama. See how close it resembles this one. Remember he said in, 24 days or whatever it was, we will fundamentally transform the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was right. But you know, then 2012, I don't know if he did this deliberately, it just slipped out. But I think he didn't let things slip out. It was deliberate. He made the quote that we belong to the government. This was part of the plank that he put in the 2012 Democratic Republican. Hillary, deep-seated cultural codes, religious beliefs, and structural biases have to be changed. Now, how close. Does that resemble quotes by Mussolini or Gentile or some of these other guys? These are fascist quotes, and they're extremely dangerous because we don't understand what is happening. You know, collectivism itself, the term collectivism came out of the word, of the Italian word fascism, which means groupism or collectivism. But it came directly from where, that's where collectivism came from, fascism, and that word fascism. So in all these methods, yeah, you were talking about what's happening in St. Louis, talking about what's happening in Berkeley. I think I told you, you know, I was a cop in Miami, Florida for 4 years, worked salt and pepper teams, was in the rioting down there, was a cop during the riots down there, in 1968 when, Nixon was selected as a GOP candidate for presidency. Had 13 bullet holes in my police car after this is over. Whole streets were burned down. But we're going to see much worse than that now. This is just the beginning. Just the beginning. Johnny, we haven't seen anything yet. Well, watch tonight. You know what? Watch tonight. Watch St. Louis tonight and see what happens again. And what are they protesting? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what they're protesting. The protest doesn't matter. You know, it's the fact that they're out there shutting up people, shutting up the opposition, instilling fear. Hey, these guys are the brown shirts. These guys are Hitler's brown shirts. They're Stalin stormtroopers. I mean, this is not new. And we blindly sit by and let these people overturn us, let these people run roughshod over us, let them kick down our fences, and we're supposed to sit back and not notice all the insanity that's engulfing this country?
And you know, Mr. Sasser, part of the insanity that I can't get my head around, sir, is we, and I'll use we as the conservatives, the patriots, liberty lovers, libertarians, Republicans, we have the presidency, we have both houses of Congress, we have 34 of the governor's mansions out of 50 states, and we now have a conservative skewed Supreme Court. So why are we allowing all of this violence in the streets? You know, this big article came out earlier today that they're gonna, that Berkeley PD will be allowed to use their pepper spray.
Yeah.
Well, maybe Berkeley PD should have been allowed to use their sidearms about 4 or 5 months ago. You know, I'm 45 years old, Mr. Sasser, and grew up in the 70s and 80s. This kind of nonsense just would not have been tolerated.
Yeah. Well, the problem we have here, John, is yes, we have this now. But let's go back to the 1980 when Ronald Reagan became president. And everybody had high hopes, you know, after the Jimmy Carter era of malaise and, you know, economic decline. Everybody had high hopes. And it did. We did. We had the largest period of economic growth in history. So, hey, we said, America's back. There was a freedom of that city on the hill, that shining city on the hill. The Iron Curtain dissolved, you know, tear down that wall. And then what happened? Soon we followed with Clinton and Obama, and the long march through the institutions continued, and the fundamental transformation of America. We're going to see the same thing again. Why? Newt Gingrich said it best. And he made a quote that I read someplace, and Newt said that what happens is these people control the institutions, and if you control the institutions, education, media, entertainment, they control the institutions. If you control the institutions, you control the country, and we will never be able to take back the institutions. There has to be another way. But he says sooner or later, one or the other, we or they will win. And I use we. You know, John, liberalism, you and I are liberals, okay? George Washington, Thomas Jefferson were classic liberals. Liberals believe the Constitution, you know, free enterprise. This is the basic beliefs of liberalism. What do you think that no longer do liberals use the term? It's become progressive now. But it's a form of deflection, a double talk. And, you know, so it's kind of, you're right, it's mind-boggling that what we're doing here. And but it's, I think it's easy to see, we should be able to see this thing if we look at the media, for example. Do you believe anything you read on the mainstream media? I don't.
No, no. It's all spun with an agenda, and it's, you know, mostly lies anymore. It's, they've lost so much credibility. They have about a as high as approval rating as Congress does with the American people.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, the American people don't really care anymore. But what they're doing is that we're kind of like turtles. We're drawing our feet and our heads back into the shell, and we're peering out in disbelief. You know, we get it disbelief when we've got 50 different genders. And 50 different genders other than male? Shouldn't we be saying, are you gotta be out of your ever loving mind? But no, it's not. And when we got men donning dresses and makeup and pretending to be women and insisting on using the women's ladies' bathroom, you know, when people identify as aardvarks or poodles or whatever, and we're expected to go along with it. In fact, California has introduced a bill that if you don't use the proper pronoun of that 50 selection, mm-hmm. you can go to jail for it.
Yeah,
now that's fascism.
So, just quick question to all of our listeners and viewers in California: are they supposed to carry like maybe a little laminated list or something? 50 is a lot to keep straight.
It is.
Yeah. It's gotten where I can't keep male and female straight. You know, I mean, look at Chelsea Bradley Manning today. Now, see, this is insanity. They were going to make him a fellow here at Harvard. They were going to make him, you know, a distinguished fellow there. This is a guy who committed treason, who was a spy. And because he's a transgender, and a very ugly transgender, that's always kind of cracks me up here. You know, I know I'm Christian, and I'm not supposed to make judgments. But you're a fool if we don't make judgments. That's one of the things they use against us, is our Christian attitudes, that you don't make judgments, that you just accept and go on. But John,
yeah.
These people are kicking our fences down.
Charles, if we can, back to the section of your book, As Rome Went, I just want to highlight a few things. You use the examples of historian Edward Gibbon for the causes behind the fall of the Roman Empire. And folks, the reason I want to read through some of these is because the level of similarity between the ancient Roman culture and the reasons that it fell and what's going on in our world today. One, undermining of the dignity and sanctity of home and family. Military buildups against enemies outside when real decadence was within. A mad craze for pleasure and entertainment. Decay of religion, spirituality. Inflation, all-consuming taxation. A top-heavy, expanded bureaucracy. A loss of historical traditions. Welfare state. Sexual perversion, and much more. I mean, it goes on and on, Charles. We are seeing today this exact scenario play out in America, and you go on to end this part of the book with a quote from Winston Churchill: "The inherent vice of capitalism is the unequal sharing of the blessings. The inherent virtue of socialism is the equal sharing of misery." And I think that really sums it up nicely, because with socialism, you have a guaranteed equal outcome. And usually that's very much subpar for everybody who is on that bottom level. And, you know, socialism's like a pyramid scheme. You know, you have the people at the very top controlling all the wealth and resources and redistributing enough so people can basically survive, not thrive, and people don't have the opportunity to make more for themselves in this socialist mindset. But, if you look at Rome and you see how, you point out in the book, for 400 years it was, you know, a nation and pretty much the cornerstone of civilization in that time period. And what are we at with America? 240 some years, and we're already, you know, at the points that led to the very end of the Roman Empire. How much longer can America survive with this expanded bureaucracy, the welfare state, and this continued cultural Marxism and socialism that we see being pushed on society?
Well, Tiddler says that the average, and I believe I agree with him, the average empire lasts through this cycle about 200 years. And what we've been, we're here about, what, 230, 40 years. America is about that old. So, you know, we're on the downward cycle of Tiddler's tyranny, liberty cycle. And, what we have to, I think what we all need to understand is that talking about, you know, the work and so forth, I was just reading, I think it was, I think it's in John, is it John? Luke. That's in John, Luke. Yeah, Luke gives the parables, I think the parables of the money, where he gives these three, the master gives the three servants so much money each, gets them the same amount of money, and then he goes and they're supposed to do something with this thing, with this money. So one of them increased it tenfold, one increased fivefold, and one just kept it and hid it in the handkerchief. And when he came back, he, you know, rewarded the tenfold, the fivefold, and that guy, you know, the guy who hid it in the handkerchief didn't get anything. You see, the Bible doesn't say that, you know, you hear all the time that Christianity is supposed to be passionate and compassionate and sensitive and give and things like that. The Bible doesn't say that. It gives spiritual advice and moral advice. It also gives economic advice in that people who produce, I think I always liked Abraham Lincoln. He said, the man who made the corn should eat the corn. I mean, this all our founding fathers went along this whole thing. Taxing profits actually encourages idleness. You know, one of the founding fathers. And so to take from one to give to another, you know, is to give his industry away, Thomas Jefferson, and so forth, and it encourages laziness and slothfulness. I mean, it goes on and on. We never meant to be all this thing, this guarantee of everyone gets something. You know, I think I told you, you know, I was on Occupy Wall Street, undercover journalist. And all these people, these petunias wanted was to free everything. Big signs running around, free this, free this,
well,
free
who,
this.
Who was going to pay for it?
Yeah, that's what
is my question. Mr. Sasser, I want to interject quickly, because I so appreciate, your definition of that scripture that we all know so well. It seems to me that much of what we're talking about tonight, and correct me if I'm wrong, sir, but as Christians, it is supposed to come from our hearts through the power of the Holy Spirit under the unction and the mandate of Jesus Christ to be generous. Yes. It is not supposed to be levied upon us from an all-powerful government to be, I'm going to say, finger quotes, generous. And I would venture to say, Joe and I talk about this on the Hagman Daily Show a lot, that this country is stretched to the breaking point where men like myself and everybody else here at Team Hagman, we're giving away half of what we make. How is anyone ever to get ahead if you give away half of what you make? I don't care what reason you're giving it away for. It's half of what we make. So we've lost our way some here. We've lost our way somewhere between the Bible and this Occupy Wall Street mentality. We've completely lost our way.
Yes, John. Yeah, the thing is that once you make victims of people, you own those people. Do I have time for a little anecdote here?
We got plenty of time. We got about 25 minutes before the end of the show.
Okay, I always like to tell this. When my ex-sister-in-law, I'm not going to give names or anything, but my ex-sister-in-law belonged, do you know, Tulsa World, which is the nearest big city to me, Tulsa World used to run a full page every week of all the support groups, right? Of all the support groups.
Okay.
You know, it seems that victims can't live without, support groups. What we've got a society that worships helplessness, impotence, weakness, frailty. We all have come to that point where everybody needs to be a victim. You're a victim of race. You're a victim of gender. You're a victim of some kind of disabilities. You're a victim of stupidity. Whatever it is, everybody is a victim of something or another. My sister-in-law, anyway, belonged to one of these support groups called Children of Dysfunctional Families. Now, my brother, you know, we all grew up a hillbillies. My brother is is about as urbane as the bearded guys from Duck Dynasty. So he wouldn't go with her to these meetings, so I went with her one time. And so I go in there, and what we're doing, we go gather around all these people and talk about victims, and they're always talking, they've got dramas of abuse and alcoholism, desertion, just overall wreckages of life. I want to jump up and say, get over it for Pete's sake. You don't stop wallowing in self-pity. Go out and live a life. But at any rate, so each one of them told his little story. They went around the circle, and each one of them told his or her little story, and it got to me. And I can see my sister-in-law really looking at me. And she's a little bit worried. I can see she's nervous, you know. I'm a writer. I know how to do a story. The time I got through telling a story, there wasn't a dry eye in that place, John. You know, it just... I know how to take, I mean, everybody is hugging me and everything. And she says, she was really upset with me. And I said, oh, what's the reason? They all had a good time. That's what they came there for. You know, to cry and feel pity and these kind of things. And hey, I just helped them along that way. So you see, yeah, but the thing is, John, I think they did an estimate now that sooner or later, 80% of Americans are going to be victims of something, of each other, of race, halitosis, or something. They're going to be the victim of something, you know. It'll be a day when all God's children are going to be victimized. Everybody will be a victim. Everybody, except white guys.
Okay, now let me ask you this. Victimization. I used to listen to Larry Elder, and I think he coined the term victocrat. Victim and dependency are very, very close to bondage. Victims are essentially in spiritual bondage, correct?
Absolutely. And they also become, they're susceptible then to economic bondage, you know, to cultural bondage. They're back on the plantation. I mean, they're back on the plantation as slaves. And that's just not a healthy thing to be. You know, what we've done is, you know, common sense is an endangered species. And what we've done here is we replace common sense by excessive emotionalism and groupthink. And therefore, you know, that's why you gather around and tell all the little stories and pity-patty each other. But, you know, if I hear one more goofy celebrity, I'm going to throw up my pickup truck. If I hear one more of them tell me to... wants to raise my awareness, you know, wants to admonish me about some group self-esteem. You don't give anybody self-esteem. You earn self-esteem, I keep trying to tell them. Or if they admonish me because my lack of tolerance for drunken bums or dopers or welfare cheats or whatever it is, if I get one more admonish, I'm definitely going to throw up out the window of my pickup truck. Because, you know, when are we going to say, come on, get over this crap? Don't you people know what it's like to be a slave? Look at history. Of course, nobody knows history. We don't hardly teach it in colleges anymore. We teach gender studies or, you know, but we don't teach history or economics or we don't need to teach anything useful anymore. Maybe we teach Legos and, you know, the Kardashians, but we don't teach anything useful anymore. And so once we've become victims, and to become victims, to be made into victims, incidentally, is fascism. And, gosh, John, there's so many things of, if you hadn't have said this was Rome, that you were reading all these maladies that afflicted Rome at the end, if you hadn't said Rome, guess what everybody would have said? That's the U.S.
Yeah.
That's yeah.
And it's, but, it's crazy to think that, you know, how far down this road we've come, and specifically with the, as Sean from the SGT report said in hour one, the openness of the anti-God and the God-hating that is promoted in the schools, in public, in the government, just all over the place. These people aren't even, atheist and agnostic anymore. They are vehemently anti-God, anti-Jesus, and they hate each and every person who believes in the Lord, and they're becoming more vocal about it. And we see, you know, this decay of the family, decay of society, and these attacks on God. The political ideological divide in this country is so great. aside from some great confrontation or conflict between the two groups, I don't see how this can, you know, rectify itself without conflict.
Conflict has already started, John. I mean, it started in Berkeley and St. Louis up there last night, in Charlottesville. The conflict is there. The conflict has been going on since at least the 30s. And, it's been going on even before then. I mean, Roosevelt, chaos. Chaos is the mother of socialism, John. Chaos. You gotta have chaos. And they're creating. This is deliberate creation. We've got people. Obama lives 2 miles. You know, I hate to keep bringing up Obama, but this guy's done more harm to this country than has been done to it in any single little short period of time in his entire history. This man lives 2 miles from the White House. He didn't go and retire someplace, you know, like Bush's did or any of the others did. He's there, and he started this resistance movement. He's part of this resistance movement. And what we don't understand is this is funded. This thing about the white supremacists and so forth, these people are insignificant. They're abhorrent to everybody, but they're deflected. They're another deflection that fascism uses to get people's mind off and to control people.
And Charles, real quick, just John mentioned this earlier about the Confederate rally tomorrow on Saturday in Virginia. I wonder how much of these people at the organizational level are influenced by federal government employees who are undercover trying to provoke a situation versus how much of this is organic. But that's something hopefully we'll find out one day.
Oh, that is a typical fascist movement. That's a typical fascist ploy. Let's look at the Kristallnacht in Germany. And when, you know, all these people were out there spontaneously breaking the Jewish windows and, you know, just setting fire to everything. Guess who was behind all that? Hitler's henchmen, the brown shirts and stuff. They were out there organizing this whole thing. So you think this has not been organized? Yeah, of course it's been organized. Look, almost everyone, if they do arrest anybody at these disturbances, 90% of them are not from that area. And if you look back at the history of these people, they go back to Occupy Wall Street, to the Antifa bunch, and guess who's supporting a lot of this stuff? George Soros. Now, you know, I hate to sound like a conspiracy nut, but guys, it's no conspiracy when the facts are there.
Well, there's that name again, George Soros, and there's that word again, conspiracy. But I want to really give a tip of the hat to our guest, Charles Sasser. This is Crushing the Collective. You see it? Crushing the Collective, written by our guest, Charles Sasser. And this is the bibliography. This is a well-documented, well-annotated. This man backs up what's in this book. And for any listeners or viewers who maybe have heard Sean from SGT tonight and our Hour 2 guest, Roxchella, and her point of view, and a lot of this stuff's kind of swirling around your head, and you're thinking, man, what's going on? The Luciferians are in control, but the money's not worth anything anymore, and now Mr. Sasser says we're all victims about to go into bondage. Whoa, 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 whoa. I would say this book right here is not a bad place to start. WND Superstore, promo code Hagman, Crushing the Collective, written by Charles Sasser. And Charles, if I may say so, you wrote a great book, sir.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, and the book has just been released, I think, this week. But so it should be in most major bookstores by now. Also Amazon and Barnes & Noble and so forth. So it's out there until it's censored, you know, till Antifa gets so sensitive that they're not only tearing down statues and changing street names and so forth, but they actually start burning books that are offensive. But, yeah. Until then, it'll probably be there. But if you start seeing bonfires with books, you'll see it on top of the bonfires, I'm sure.
Charles, how is this collectivist mindset, excuse me, this collectivist mindset paving the way for the biblical tribulation and the rise of the Antichrist and the establishment of that new world order?
Okay, let's look at a couple of things. The stabilizing force for generations of the world, the entire world, the stable force has been Western civilization. It has been the stabilizing influence throughout. It's the thing that's kept the world from going completely bonkers, from completely erupting, has been Western civilization. And now Western civilization is on decline. Look at Europe. Europe is gone. I mean, it's been taken over. Okay? Now, with that stabilizing influence gone there, then now it's, I'm getting to the why, you know, the last days. Now the U.S. is declining and has lost influence throughout the world. It's no longer the stabilizing influence it was. I mean, even when a North Korean, when a little idiot, little fat dwarf like Kim Jong-un can go out there and start shooting IBMs over Japan and, you know, out toward, even when it is threatening the U.S. to incinerate the U.S., even when that happens, the whole world is going bonkers. The whole world is going bonkers. Now you got Iran, you got China, you got North Korea, you got the Russians who are having a big military training this coming week, I believe, which is the largest they've had since the fall of the Iron Curtain. You've got all these, and what is it? Let's look at the last days. You know, I know you say, well, look at that. Another Christian with his, you know, doom is gloom type of a thing. But if we look at what it says in the Bible, Iran, China from the east, Russia, they're all joining together. They're all allying together. And they're allying against what? The little Satan and the great Satan. Israel and the United States. And where's the conflict occurring? In Syria. And who's in the conflict there? Russia, Iran, China, and so forth. And us, of course, and Israel. Israel is sitting there. It knows. Israel knows what is occurring. I mean, they're Old Testament people, the Jews are. They're Old Testament people. But in the law, it kind of gives out the law of what's going to happen. And Jesus kind of, you know, he brought grace where there used to be the law. But yeah, they know what's happening. And a matter of fact, I've been commissioned to do, I'm going to Israel in November, and I've been commissioned to do an article on how Israel is coping with all this. The terrorism. Of course, they built the wall there, you know, along between Bethlehem to divide Jerusalem from Bethlehem and keep the bad guys out. And how are they coping with all this? What is their view, and how are they coping with terrorism? So this is one of the things I'll be doing when I'm in Israel, is to look at what they're doing and what they expect and what they're going to think. But they know, they realize. I mean, Benjamin Netanyahu is one of my heroes, one of the very few political heroes I have. He and Roosevelt, I mean, Roosevelt, oh gosh, no, Reagan and Churchill. And, but he was special forces. Netanyahu was. He spoke out many times that yes, that they are the center of this whole thing, Israel is, and they are, and we've got all the forces moving into position, and once they move into position, one nuke is all it's going to take. If that nuke hits one of the U.S. bases or hits the mainland, you know, this week threatened to incinerate the U.S. Now this guy's a dangerous little character. But all it takes is one. And then you've got Iran, which is supplying them, and China, which is supplying them, Russia's all. You think the allies, you think this is not going to end up, it's not going to end up well, Jim. It's just not going to end up well. So, what do we do? I'm working on a series of novels right now. I've got a new novel coming out that kind of looks at this, but I'm working on a series of novels that I want to do on what happens if we have an EMP, you know, which will destroy everything, all this technology that we're using right now. If all this is in your car, won't start, you have no electricity, trucks can't deliver food. They're estimating 30 million people will die in the U.S. in the first year. Now, an explosion of that type, a nuclear explosion in the U.S. in the atmosphere could do that, and would do it. It would destroy everything. And the U.S. would be back into living in hovels. And what do we depend upon? We depend upon communities. And guess who's going to be the best? The small communities.
Yep.
The old-fashioned small communities with high standards, with the old type of principles. Those are going to be the people who are going to be in the best position to revive from all this. People in the cities, they don't know how to take care of themselves. They don't know how to survive. They're going to be stealing from each other and burning. You're going to see rioting. They're killing each other. It's going to be total chaos. I mean, this is just one scenario that I'm working on. I said, my gosh, how can you be so negative? No, I'm not negative. Actually, I'm a very positive person. You know, you don't do the things I've done in life without being positive. But at the same time, I'm a realist. I'm 75 years old now. I have seen, I've experienced firsthand all this. I was a combat correspondent. I was in special forces. I've taken missionaries into the outback in Algeria. I mean, you know, I've raced camels in Egypt. I've been there personally to see what's happening and talk to the people. If you listen, if you just listen, you'd be surprised what you'll learn. And there's a lot of nervousness in the world, and this world is going to be chaotic.
Yeah.
And
Charles, I just want to say this real quick. I watched on Monday or Tuesday a few episodes of a History Channel special on basically the history of the automotive industry in America, and you know that industry from the beginning of its existence till today. And one of the things that really stood out was the amount of innovation, as there was not this big, government oversight. There wasn't all this, regulation and taxation, and people were allowed to create. And you had these competitions, but from these different car manufacturers, from Ford to Chrysler to the Dodge brothers, who worked with Ford for a while. But this, the competition there, really opened it up for jobs and whatnot, and they went from they're making about an average of $2.50 a day till Henry Ford implemented the $5 day, propelling a number of families into the middle class, creating that middle class. But we see the opposite today, specifically with even now with the moving in of artificial intelligence and these kiosks in place of fast food and other minimum wage workers and manufacturers. So we're gonna, the whole point, I said all that to say this, universal basic income is being promoted by the left right now. And this is another form of this collectivist mindset. What do you see would happen to the society if a universal basic income is implemented?
Who wants to live in a society where you cannot be successful? And but in a nation of victims, what else do you expect? This is what you expect. Let's have a universal income. Let's have nobody successful. So like Winston Churchill said that time, everybody lives in equal misery. So this is, it will be implemented. One pair health system. Got a story there. I was riding motorcycles around Europe one time, staying in bed and breakfast. And I stayed with this lawyer one night, and he got to talking. He raised Weimaraner dogs. And his dog got sick. They have universal health care there in England. And his dog got sick, and he took the vet, who still has free enterprise. The vet gave him a specialist, went to a specialist the same day, and then in a day or so, with a skin condition, the Weimaraner dog was well again. The lawyer got a skin condition. He calls his area health care center, and he got an appointment for 3 weeks away. So he waited 3 weeks, and then when he went to have his there, he said, no, you called the wrong one. You're out of your district. Therefore, he had to wait another 3 weeks. Then they got a specialist, and he waited another 3 weeks. And at the end, he said, during this time, a friend of his had a heart attack. And they did the same thing. They sent an ambulance out, but they sent the ambulance in the wrong district, and they sent it back and sent another ambulance, and the guy died. I said, so what did you do about your skin condition? And he said, I treated myself. It's safer that way for your patootie. And this is the thing you see. I mean, I see this one. All you have to do is listen to people when you go away places. And that's what I do. I stay with people. I listen. I once walked all the way across Guatemala. And it was a long story how I ended up there. But anyway, I walked across Guatemala. And I've got all these stories. And I tell some of them and, write about some of them a lot. But I listen to the people. I'd walk along. Everybody walks in Central America. And I'd walk too. So I walk with all these people, and they're telling me all the stories and And you know, I got to know all these people. And, you know, these people, those people are self-dependent for the most part. They're not waiting around for the government to take care of them. They work hard in the fields and so forth. I have a great deal of admiration for the Latins in Central America. A great deal of admiration for them. And, but it's changing now because, you know, I was there during all the wars in the 80s, you know, with the revolutions you know, when Marxism was trying to take over the whole country and has to some degree. Well, look at Venezuela and look what happened. And, yeah. So what's going to happen? What's the result? Yeah, we're going to, and what can we do? I always say, what can we do? Well, we talk about the small communities. You become active in your small community and you don't shut up. You don't sit back and hold your peace. You speak up against these people because that's what fascism does. It prevents opposition. It smothers all opposition. And the best way to do that is to make you a victim, to make you dependent upon government. So if you become a victim and you depend upon government, the government's going to pay you like a universal wages.
Yeah.
The government's going to pay you. You're not a free person any longer. You're a slave. And it's going to get worse and worse and control every aspect of your life. Even now, is there any area of your life where there's not some control? I don't know.
No, it's hard to find. It's hard to find. Charles, we are in just the last minute and a half here, 2 minutes, and I want to thank you so much for coming on. Folks, go to WorldNet Daily Superstore, get Charles's book, Crushing the Collective, and you can do that at WorldNet Daily Superstore using promo code Hagman. Charles, I want to thank you for coming on again and spending this last hour with us with the tremendous insight and the fantastic book. We absolutely love it here, and we urge our audience to get a copy of the book. You really laid out much of the dangers that we find ourselves facing with this collectivist mindset, the socialist, Marxist, communist mentality that we see in the mainstream media and in society. And we thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to come here and speak with us.
It's been a privilege. Thank you, guys.
Oh, the pleasure was ours. Thank you so much. Our very special guest, Mr. Charles Sasser. The book, Crushing the Collective. Visit the WND Superstore and or simply go to Hagman Report and click the banner at the top. Either way, you'll get there. And please remember to use the promo code Hagman, as it's a win all the way around. It helps us keep the lights on, keeps Mr. Sasser writing, and benefits our friends at WorldNet Daily. Thank you, Mr. Sasser.
Thank you guys for doing what you're doing.
God bless you.
God bless you.
All right, folks, that will do it for us tonight. We did a fantastic week of shows. Don't forget the Hagman Daily Show. Both John and I host that show each and every day, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and that's available for archive on Blog Talk Radio as well and on any podcast apps. And also, Eric built a fantastic page from Hagman Report. All you do is go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the listen button or the two new shows button at the very top of the page. There you can find each individual shows for the week. And we're having a lot of fun doing it today on our show. We had Michael Snyder on. My father will be in Branson, Missouri through the weekend and will probably be back on Tuesday. So John and I will be here on Monday evening. And my father will probably be in studio, just not on the air. Want to thank everybody for another great week. All the people out there who support our show, thank you so much. We appreciate the prayers, the emails, and we will be back here next week. I'll be on Dave Hodges for the 45 minutes, last 45 minutes of the first hour on Sunday. So tune into that if you'd like. Have a great weekend.